what is it that we must do to move towards and through and to attain the healing that we seek as human beings, but as African people as well? What are your thoughts?
The first thing that hits me is my head fills with African proverbs, especially with those two women. I'm telling Lori, Makita, when they start talking, proverbs are hitting me. And one of them is, a person doesn't go hunting when your house is on fire. So we know as an African people, our houses have been on fire. And we may need to hunt to get certain things, but the only way that fire is going to get put out is by doing it together. You with your little cup of water is not going to put the fire out. We have to work collaboratively, cooperatively, look in those rooms. If we don't see our sisters or brothers we know should be in there, we need to go fetch them. And I don't believe in waiting to be invited anymore. And sometimes we go in black spaces and we're not welcome because we bring Shanae, Pookie, whoever them we need to bring, so that everybody can benefit from the growth, the healing. So healing first is a community-based function. And I work with children and I see people who don't understand the cultural aspect, having a parents in the waiting room and the kids upstairs with their white therapists learning how to be assertive and talk about different things, but they don't heal the relationship between those parents and their children. So I teach that children come in a package. It's called a family. And if you are up in my mama Leveda's house, you're not running anything. So if you don't bring her in the process, you're not going to be able to help provide or any other kids she has. First, that's the first thing. The second thing about healing is that it is purposeful. You're not going to fool around and fall into healing by accident. You have to have an intention that I got to change some stuff. I don't maybe know how. I don't know when, where, or who, but I know this isn't working for me. That's what we have to do as a Black community. And the last little piece I put is that we can't be stubborn and stuck. There is one more African proverb that says, by the time the fool has learned the game, the players have dispersed. So we don't want to be slow at learning how to survive and thrive in an infrastructure that wasn't built by us, for us, or designed by us. So we have to learn how to crack that.
So how do we build? I mean, so to me, I hear you saying we have to get to where we believe that we can build our own.
Yeah.
And that what we build will ultimately not only serve us, but this is the model for serving humanity.
There you go.
We have to see ourselves as the center of human existence itself. And that gives us a certain gravitas, a certain power, an ability to fashion and create solutions that are generic and universal, that are cosmic in nature. How do we do that? How do we change our minds to where we begin to enact and act in that way? What do you think?
We can't continue to hold on to things that were taught to us that don't function for us. So when Black parents,
like what? Yeah.
I'll give you a good example.
Yeah.
You know, I grew up in the South. My mama would get me to go outside to get the switch. You got to go switch shopping. Which one is she going to get you with? And in that era, what we didn't understand is why we whip our kids. We want them to be safe. We want them not to be killed by a white person or a police officer or even in a gang. We want our children to live. So we think that as Black parents, if I whoop them, and I quote the Bible, spare the rod and spoil the child, then I'm doing what the Lord want me to do. I'm doing all this. And what we don't know is that we were taught that from colonizations and masses. That's not ours. We didn't come up with that. Because you know what? When we are in a village, before a child asks for food and they got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 20 parents, all of us owning that child, before they can ask for food and get hurt, one of us got permission to stop them.
Mm-hmm.
So a village approach, when we give each other permission and see all children as our children, every child is our child. We should act like it. So that's the first piece I'm talking about. How do we do that? We just tell ourselves that's not going to work anymore. And there are a lot of psychological things we do that keep us in health and keep us in a space of being stuck. And those things are things that pull us back. But I remember one that my grandma taught me, second grade education, daughter of two generations from being a slave. And one of the things she taught me is that if somebody's telling you something that ain't true about you, just see it as the devil and say, I rebuke you. I went to college, got a PhD, and they call that thought stopping. You hear me? Thought stopping. You get paid for saying thought stopping. I'm just remembering my grandma Alice saying, I rebuke it.
That's right.
So we need to use our history. We need to use our elders. We need to use each other as resources who are giving and holding information and knowledge. And when we finally say, I have a right to wellness. My children have a right to wellness. My community has a right to wellness. If suffering and hurt and harm has paid that price, it's been done. We have a right to be well, and we have to achieve it by any means necessary.
I mean, what you think?
Time waits for no one. We must stand for what's right. All the children of the world, we should not shed no blood tonight. Can't you see what the government do? How they make their case? You may say peace to me, I may say assalamu alaikum too. The world is now. What are we waiting for?
I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. We're broadcasting live from George Floyd Square. We're calling this George Floyd Week. Many celebrations of George Floyd and his life going on around the city, around the community, around the country, around the world, commemorating the death of George Floyd, the murder of George Floyd. And some are calling this observation the angelversary, the fifth angelversary of the transition of George Floyd into becoming an ancestor. Thanks to my brother Wayne McFarland and Ryan Listman for being and providing a musical context for these conversations. By the way, I tell people that Wayne once said, Al, give me anything, any thought, any idea, any word, and I can put music to it. So I challenge him every time to show up as the spirit in the spirit and to make this context flow. And you'll hear more of that today. I want to continue with a special colleague, now guest, a person that I am introducing to community and to the world in the pages of Inside News, but who is introducing me and us to the voice, the will, the energy of the next generation. And that is our columnist here at Insight News, Haley Taylor Schlitz. Okay, let me get it right. And listen, Haley is, I think, 22, 23. She's an assistant attorney general working for Keith Ellison over at the state AG's office. She's also the youngest Black woman, the youngest woman, I believe, to graduate from law school in this country. She was in law school at the age of 16, I believe.
No.
Unbelievable. And she's here right now, and she belongs to us and belongs to you. I always tell her when I speak to her, always say hi to your mom and dad and tell them how much we appreciate them for bringing you into the world. Haley, as always, I call on you, and you do this in your column in Insight News, but when we talk, to represent the vision, the voice of the next generation. What's on your mind? What are your thoughts?
You know, I appreciate you having me on, and I appreciate being surrounded by such wise minds. You know, the primary thought that I think is on Gen Z's mind, you know, we're inheriting the state of this country, you know, and a lot of that comes with contradictions, a lot of that comes with discrimination and hate, and a lot of that comes with faith and hope as well. And so as I hear you guys talking, you know, what the thoughts that are on my mind is how important it is to define Black success and not mimic white success. Making sure that we take what's ours and make ourselves the center, like you were saying. And that's kind of the theme I hear amongst everyone who has spoken so far. And I think part of that, I want to build off of what Dr. B was just saying, is healing. You know, like you said, Al, I am a columnist for Insight News, and I just wrote a column, actually. So I want to read a little snippet of it, if you'll allow. Mm-hmm. And it's about George Floyd and grief. And this is from a perspective of Gen Z. And so just a brief moment, and you could go on Insight News to read the rest of it. I'm just going to read the little tail end of it here. That pressure never really goes away. It lives in our lives daily. It follows us into schools, hospitals, courtrooms, neighborhoods. It weighs on every conversation we have with our families about safety. It sits on our backs when we try to dream, when we dare to rest. But I write this not only to grieve, but to break the cycle. Because if we do nothing else with our pain, let it be this. Let it end with us. Let this be the final inheritance. Let future generations inherit joy uninterrupted. Let them meet their grandparents. Let them breathe freely, not with fear, but with faith. We cannot bring them back, but we can tell the truth. We can demand a world where this pain is no longer passed down like a family tradition. We can insist on justice, not just in the courts, but in everyday architecture of our lives. So, and I resonate personally, and I've talked to you a couple of days about this. Thank you. I talked to you about this over the last couple of days about how George Floyd's murder was just weeks after the anniversary of my grandfather's murder. He was the second person killed in the Rodney King civil unrest. He never was able to attend any of my mother's graduations because he was murdered when my mother turned 18. So, you know, this was a very sensitive time for us. And for me, I've found that I lean very much into the arts when trying to heal. You know, I've played the piano for 10 years. I'm a spoken word poet, and a poet that particularly stands out to me. And I think this builds on intergenerational connectedness because there's a certain type of wisdom that you get from living life. And it really has resonated in that kind of experience passed down to Gen Z and the generations after us will really be the defining factor in not repeating history, but making progress. Maya Angelou's poem, When Great Trees Fall, is one that I read at my grandmother's funeral, and it's where I'll end, I promise. But I have this brief snippet of her poem, which I absolutely adore.
And I'm going to put you on the spot. I'm going to ask you if you freestyle. Do you freestyle?
I sometimes do. Well,
Wayne is here. We got some music, so we're going
to
do something
there
today.
There we go. We need to freestyle. I'll have you take a word from this, but this is the snippet that I think is most applicable to our conversation. When great souls die, our reality bound to them takes leave of us. Our souls, dependent upon their nurture, now shrink, wizened. Our minds, formed and informed by their radiance, fall away. We're not so much maddened as reduced to the unutterable ignorance of dark, cold caves. And when great souls die, after a period, peace blooms. Slowly and always irregularly, spaces fill with a kind of soothing electric vibration. Our senses, restored, never to be the same, whisper to us. They existed. They existed. We can be and be better, for they existed. I think that's what's on the mind of Gen Z, that the people before us existed and we have stories to learn, experience to gain, insight to get to push us forward, because of course we can't do this alone, but more than not doing it alone is we're standing on the shoulders of greatness and progress. And I think that's like, that is what Gen Z is feeling on the anniversary, but also as we come of age.
Dr. B, jump in.
I'm just so proud of her. I'm so full. I feel like I'm having church up in here. And I don't know your parents, but I'm one of them. That's all I said. Her last name is now going to be Akinsanya. Because what I feel hearing you that resonates so deeply is all the energy and love we hope to pour into you that is being realized, and I'm seeing it before my very eyes, that I have hope. You are my hope, and you stand in that space of power and hope, and girl, you bad as you want to be, and that even makes me happier. So I'm just thinking that when we see young people like her, who are just geniuses in their own right, they're not just limited. Like, you know, some people who do Tesla, they're not limited with their genius. You are broad with it and deep with it. and so young to hold so much. I'm so grateful that I live to see you today. That's what I feel.
Marquita, thoughts, what are your impressions?
What I heard was respect.
Yes.
And I don't hear that very often from Gen Z. You led with respect, and I thank you. So I was moved because of that. And to know that what we've done has not gone in vain.
That's right.
And that's an important thing to communicate to my generation.
Yes.
From you, we will go to the ends of the earth to make sure you make it. But what we want is to know that you see us in the same way we see you.
We do.
And so we love you from all of us. Much love.
Lori, jump in. Let's bring this on.
Ooh, this is emotional up here. I'm with you, Dr. B. I feel like I'm in church as well. It's amazing to hear our youth talk about the backs or the who they're standing on. And I think about my parents and their parents and how my children are doing the same thing. And it's really amazing to know that they're listening, they're hearing, and they're understanding how important they are and how important you are, my dear, because you are important. And so it really brings warmth to my heart as well. It's really amazing what you've done and where you've come from and to have the anniversary so close to your grandfather's anniversary is pretty amazing. And it's amazing that you are bringing that out here.
And let me just jump in. There's one more Yoruba proverb. It says, when we lose an elder, a library burns.
Right.
But I see those chapters in those books in you and in all of us. So the library might burn, but the books, they have been read. And they're continuing to read and be read and grow and add more and more chapters. So I think that not only are you standing on the elders' shoulders and the ancestors' shoulders and the creator's shoulders, you're standing as a gift.
That's right. Reverend Dr. Dwayne Davis is here. He's lead minister at Plymouth Congregational Church of Minneapolis. He's also an adjunct professor of preaching and church leadership at United Seminary. Doctor, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you
for being here. What's on your mind and what's on your heart as you listen to this conversation,
yes,
but also as you reflect on the meaning, the lessons that come from us looking at, holding the memory of the murder of George Floyd and the reconciliation, the healing that must come? What do you think?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McFarland. When I was listening to the conversation, well, before that conversation started, I've been in this place in the last few days of wondering why it is, especially when Black people are trying to show the world, tell the world, witness to the world of what it means to suffer here, that the majority, and here in Minneapolis, I've been saying it, it gets so comfortable remaining in the learning zone. Mm. Never move to praxis.
Mm.
Part of being a professor, teaching preaching, teaching church leadership, we don't ever rest in the comfort of just learning, that is, reading or studying it. The next step is praxis. Mm-hmm. And what has been very frustrated in the 5 years is this idea that there is more comfort in knowing all the right books to read, all of the right things to attend, to even give a twirl in 38th in Chicago every other year, and yet never apply anything you've heard or seen. And then we are left to wonder, and then people look at us when we say, you haven't moved, there's been no progress. And then we are made to feel like we're being gaslit, mm-hmm, because we said we thought we were going to be here and we haven't gotten there. And then we trot out all of the learning we did, we trot out all the places we went, but we never get to practice. So when I was listening to this conversation, and especially my young sister, I said, this is praxis. We keep living in that place, and we're asking people to come along with us because that's how we're going to make, we're going to really make the progress you've been touting, but we haven't really seen.
Wayne, Ryan, enough is enough. I think that's the message for the moment. Check this out.
Oh, Queen Justice, where are you? If they beat you up and down, lock you underground, take the crown away from you.
Lady Liberty, red, white, and blue. Did they take your dignity? Did you were born to lose?
Free or guilty, it's gonna get filthy. Better believe, roll up your sleeves. It's gonna get rough, it's gonna be tough. We all agree. We've had enough.
You know what happened?
Of all the rules you're breaking.
All the rules that you're breaking.
Of all the money you're making.
All the money that you're making.
No more life gets taken.
No more life gets taken.
This is our proclamation.
Well,
400 years, we're 400 late. Together we stand from state to state. Going back in time, we'll make America great. We need justice now, and the people won't wait. Action. No more distraction. Every step we take, we gain traction. If it can happen to one, it can happen to all. United we stand, divided we fall.
For real or guilty,
you better believe.
You better believe it.
It's gonna get rough.
It's gonna get rough.
We all agree.
We all agree.
We've had enough.
Well, with all the love that we have.
All the rules you're breaking.
All the rules you keep on breaking.
Of all the money you're
all
making.
All the money you've been making.
No more life gets
taken. No more life should be taken.
This is a proclamation.
This is a proclamation.
So we are guilty.
It's gonna get
filthy. You better believe.
You better believe it.
They said it's gonna get rough.
It's gonna get rough.
It's gonna be tough. We all agree.
We all believe.
Of all the rules you're breaking.
All the rules that you're breaking.
Of all the money you're making.
All the money you're making.
No more life gets taken.
No more life.
It's a proclamation.
Proclamation.
Trayvon Martin, Tamir Rice.
We had enough.
Michael Brown and Derrick Gonna pay the price, yeah.
We had enough.
Philando. Brianna.
George Floyd.
We had enough. So many gone. How can we fill the void?
How can we fill the void?
John Crawford.
Crawford, well,
I know you've heard.
Somebody.
Sandra Bland. Come on, let's take a stand.
We've had enough.
Sean Bell.
Sean Bell. We've had enough.
Freddie Gray. Did you hear what I say?
We've had enough.
There it is. Wayne McFarland and Ryan. That song is available on all the social media and music platforms. Enough is Enough by Ryan.
We'll be at Hook and Ladder tomorrow. So
there we go. Hook and Ladder tomorrow. Come check them out. The video is amazing. You'll love it when you check it out. I'm Al McFarland. We're coming to the close of our program today, The Healing Circle, the conversation with Al McFarland, live from the Worldwide Outreach for Christ at 3808 Chicago Avenue South in Minneapolis. We're at the heart of George Floyd Square. And we want to move towards closing with the review reflection. Dr. B, I'm going to come to you again. What do we do and how do we center ourselves for the journey ahead? How do we prepare ourselves for the fight? Deacon Charlie Irons is saying tomorrow when he has his deacon's program here, the 16th annual deacon program at Worldwide Outreach for Christ, the theme is We Are Still Fighting. How do we fight?
I think I have a few pointers. One is to remember the we. It's not a battle for you alone. And we always know that the race is not given to the swift, nor the battle to the strong, but to those who endure. So we have to endure, and we have to do it together. The second thought is even warriors must rest. Even warriors must rest. And in the third way is to remember to put on the armor of our Creator to fight that battle. And that battle is not just for us, but it's to save our children's lives. And I guess the last thing I believe, don't forget to laugh. Because one of the things that have brought us here is we got that saying, I have to laugh to keep from crying.
That's right.
But we also hear things like, well, it won't kill you, it will make you stronger. But in the end, we know that I am, because we are. So fight together. Rest as warriors. Be smart and claim your right to wellness that nobody can take because it was given to you by the Creator. That's what I'd say.
Awesome. Poems? Anything? Freestyle? What's on your mind?
You
got it.
You know, what's on my mind is a proverb that if you want to go fast, go alone. And if you want to go far, go together. You know, I'm just leaning into the work and the potential of the village and those who come before us. I'm just feeling the energy, you know, and the stories and the lessons is what fuels the fire that the younger generations have to carry the torch on further. That's what's on my mind.
Okay, well, look, we're back down to the last couple of minutes, 10 seconds each. Reverend, first of all, a final thought, word?
Your means to justice may be criticized, but never forget that your aspiration for justice is always good and right.
Lori?
I love the we. We are the we. We cannot do this without one another. And if we come together as a community, as a group, we can do this.
Marquita.
As we move forward in life, to allow space for not only what we think, but how we feel.
With that, I want to thank all of you. Let me take a minute just to give credit to the people that made this week and this program possible. I'm going to list our sponsors and supporters, first of all. They include the McKnight Foundation, the Minnesota Council, the Council for Minnesotans of African Heritage, thanks to sponsor Kowalski's Markets, also Minnesota Humanities Center. Thanks to Black Press USA, to Nubia, to Nexus, and to KFAI. Thanks to Greater MSP. Thanks to our media partners, including Nubia, and Speak Minneapolis and SPNN, St. Paul Neighborhood Network, and thanks to our host organization here, the Worldwide Outreach for Christ here at 3808 Chicago Avenue. I want to give credit to and shout out some of the individuals who've done so much to make this wonderful program happen. Steve Brunsberg and Bianca Rhodes lead the team over at St. Paul Neighborhood Network. They've done marvelous work. We are grateful for what they do in leadership and providing a platform for our voices, our visions. Their colleague, their counterpart in Minneapolis, Rebecca Smith. She's with Speak Minneapolis. We thank her for helping produce this. Our colleague who manages the StreamYard network is Jared McMullen. Also, our McFarland Media Inside News COO, Trina V. Subs. Thanks, Trina. We were supported by Carl Varnado. He's one of the masterminds behind the creation of the Nubia Narrative Initiative. If you don't know it, go to narrative.com. Narrative with a K, just like knowledge is with a K. Narrative with a K. African people, this is your home. This is your pathway to building a future. It's like building the next pyramid that'll last the next 5,000 years. think that way. It's time to think that way. Special thanks at last here. I've got about 30 seconds to Benji Salinas, who's on the camera, to James Harris, to Sanaya Bates, to Razik Saifullah, and thanks to Bernie Purek, who's doing the audio. Once again, thanks so much to Deacon Charlie Irons, and thanks to